Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Raven's Real Steel Radio. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, coming to bring to y'all another night of 31 Days of Horror. This is night 16. If you have made it up to this point, you are a brave soul. But I hope everybody's day has been good. Mine has been blessed. It has been amazing. So what we're going to do is we're not going to hold no, not going to overtalk because, you know, I ramble on. So if you want to call in, the number is 914-205-5813. That is 914-205-5813. We're going to get into these scary tales. Make sure you lock your doors, pour your drink, put the kids to bed because we don't feel like hearing them scream. And let's go.
During the late hours of the night, my mind traveled to some faraway place beyond the constraints of known reality. I found myself walking through a void of darkness, my involuntary stride upon the unseen ground guiding me through the endless realm. I eventually entered a domain tinted by twilight. A dark monolith stood at the center of the bleak illumination. I approached the standing apparatus with a mixture of dreadful caution and morbid fascination. Though its design was rudimentary, its placement within the gloom held some unknown significance. A violet shine appeared upon the construct's surface, disrupting the gray and black patterns surrounding me. The light contorted until it shaped into a horrid face that donned a metallic respirator connected to a series of tubes that disappeared into its torso. Its soulless black eyes glared at me with the malice of an evil reflection, causing me to take frantic steps back. The configuration approached the transparent threshold and hovered into the pervading twilight. Looking upon the complexity of the creature's design was like watching someone burn to death. Terrifying, yet intriguing. It wore a cyclopean armor embedded with rusted gears that rotated as it moved. Its arms were an amalgamation of tubing networked across exposed muscles. A cylindrical headgear surmounted the figure, making it resemble a great pharaoh. The gravity of my lack of understanding summoned a gripping fear that caused me to fall backward. I gazed upon the elevated conundrum as it moved towards me with an unnatural grace. Its shadow towered over me, and a violet hue flickered from inside its dark eyes as a distorted voice resounded from its respirator.
"Do not be frightened. I am the emissary. Your arrival should provide that your potential will be fulfilled if that is what you desire. However, you must first shed your mortal perception."
The mysterious being in the realm of twilight faded into the familiar textures of my bedroom ceiling. I lay there, listening to the soft rattle of the table fan that rested on the nightstand next to my bed, while I examined the nonsensical patterns above me. One could argue that I left one nightmare and woke into another. I came to my silent conclusions about the thing that called itself the emissary. The rusted cogs, the network of tubes, the towering headgear that resembled a massive piston. I'd seen all of these things before at some point in my meaningless life. Dreams will construct things from random information stored inside the brain. Although the results can be interesting, they were essentially meaningless. The mystery of the emissary had been solved by a man still in his underwear, staring up at his squiggly ceiling. My eyes averted to the window that sat adjacent to my bed, and I watched the faint light of the dawn bloom into a bright sunrise. A cloud of smoke expelled from my lungs as I sat on my front porch, thinking about the ruins of my life. My thumb moved across a plastic screen as digital images of happier times scrolled past. I could not look at them without my soul being overwhelmed by anger and regret. The inner turmoil would soon have me pondering questions of a philosophical nature, bordering on self-pity. If two people love each other, why can't they just be together? But why isn't that ever enough? Why wasn't I enough? No matter how many hours I spent on the internet, combing through online forums, or watching videos that told me my anger was justified, it did little to lift my spirit. Society can change, but human nature will always remain the same. This world has little sympathy for a broken man, and the depths of my damage were invisible to those around me. My thoughts were interrupted as I observed, with disdain, a maroon Dodge Dynasty pulling into my driveway. Die, nasty. I knew who it was, and I had absolutely no intention of standing up and walking out to greet them with disingenuous pleasantries. The girl I once knew exited the passenger side door of the vehicle. Her jeans did very little to hide the loveliness of her figure as she made her way to the front porch.
Hello, Charles.
A once familiar voice spoke. I set down my cigarette on the ashtray next to me and watched the smoke rise from the burning ember, then begrudgingly offered the coldest of responses. Hello, Julia. I looked into her green eyes and thought about how we used to make love on top of the washing machine in my garage. The memory of her soft moans reminiscent of a unity I thought would last forever. However, fate hardly ever caters to such expectations.
How are you doing?
Peachy, I responded. My eyes averted to the Dynasty still sitting in the driveway with its engine running. A man sat in its driver's seat and stared back at me with intense apprehension. I decided to ask the obvious. Why's David here? The look in Julia's eyes suggested that she predicted this line of questioning, but had held out hope that she wouldn't have to explain to me why her upgrade had accompanied her.
Please, Charles, I don't want to fight. I'm just here to get the rest of my things.
Oh, well, you're going to love what I have to say. I picked my cigarette back up and took another drag before enlightening my former lover.
Then you should get back in your car and have Mr. Perfect drive you down to the local dump, because I threw the rest of your shit out.
You did what?
That's right. I put all your stuff into boxes, drove it down to the dumpsters, and tossed them.
Even the necklace my grandmother gave me?
I couldn't help but crack an amused smile. Whatever I had with Julia was dead and buried. What did I have to lose by being honest for once?
Yes, I even threw out that hideous thing.
You son of a bitch!
Julia wailed, tears welling up in her eyes. The commotion caused the driver's side door of the Dynasty to open, and Mr. Perfect emerged from the vehicle.
Is everything all right, Julia?
She turned to him, with dripping eyes and unintelligible sobs. It was a truly pathetic display of anguish, but one that I understood all too well. A broken heart can bring out the worst in people. And for me, sorrow eventually turns to cruelty. The intrusive bravado radiating from my driveway was beyond my ability to ignore.
Everything's fine, David. I was just telling Julia here that her belongings no longer reside at this residence.
My words carried a thick, sarcastic undertone to them. My eyes were met with the cold stare of a man who spent at least 3 hours a day lifting weights. He did not seem to appreciate my sense of humor. Mr. Perfect made his way over to Julia and wrapped his veiny arms around her. After whispering something in her ear, Julia collected herself and nodded her head. They began walking back to the Dynasty, still embracing each other. So fucking dramatic. Mr. Perfect opened the passenger side door, and before Julia took a seat, she gave me some parting words.
I will be filing a police report, Charles. You had no right to throw out my stuff, and I will be pressing charges.
I smirked. This was about as close as I would get to settling the score. I'm sorry, Charles. You're just not good enough anymore. I'm going to be with David now, because that's what makes me happy. And you don't get a say-so in the matter. You just have to respect my decision. I don't have to respect a damn thing, Julia. Personally, I think a few discarded items is a small price to pay for playing games with my fucking life.
Well, you tell them where to find me, and have a wonderful day.
I said, as I placed the cigarette between my lips. I was met with another hateful scowl as Mr. Perfect backed out of the driveway. I methodically raised my right hand, ensuring he saw the extended middle digit.
A loud rumble bellowed from the Dynasty's engine as it accelerated down the street.
Maybe we can be friends after she's done siphoning you too. I hopelessly thought to myself as I watched the tailgate disappear. The sun sank into the horizon and gave way to the night sky. Julia's visit had left a bad taste in my mouth throughout the day. I hated myself for becoming this vulnerable. My dedication and passion towards her was pure. I wanted to do the right thing in a world dominated by self-serving ambition, yet this sentiment was not reciprocated. My story was another chapter in the tome of human misery. Despite all of this, something inside me, buried beneath an ocean of pain, still yearned for her. I resigned to my resting place and closed my eyes, as my memories brought me back to the day of my mother's funeral. The loss of my beloved mother to an unexpected accident had devastated me, the only person who'd ever truly loved me unconditionally. All composure was lost as I squeezed Julia's hand and stared down at my mother's coffin with overflowing eyes. Tragedy forces us to reflect on our own mortality, but the truth is that we don't want to die alone. The loss left a deep crater inside of me, one that would never truly be healed. I might have come to terms with my mother's death had her life ended on a more peaceful note.
As I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for the Spirit of Almighty God is with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me.
The preacher's words offered no solace as I imagined my mother's horrified face, illuminated by the headlights of an oncoming semi-truck, before it utterly obliterated her. The eulogy became indecipherable murmurs as I was consumed by somnolence. The world of shadow welcomed me once again as I traversed through its sightless continuum. A dreadful dissonance echoed in the surrounding darkness like the melody of feasting gluttons. Like before, I was led to a sanctuary of twilight, where a dark construct stood. Its appearance instantly reminded me of the mechanical stranger who spoke to me during my last visit. The emissary. As soon as the recognition crossed my subconscious, a prodigious beam of blinding light descended from the unseen heavens and illuminated the dark form before me. The light revealed an ominous metal chamber equipped with various straps and chains. Its revelation was accompanied by an unearthly reverberation. The sounds became a deafening crescendo as a black, twisted mass ascended from the depths of the gloom. I gazed upon the erected mound of screaming faces and writhing limbs with a terror unmatched by any previous experience. The shapeless form engulfed the chamber, sending arches from beneath its thick surface towards its pinnacle. A repulsive, belching noise resounded from within the mass as fluids were projected from the faces near its summit. The vile apparition began to recede back into the gloom, and the screams of despair faded. The chamber became visible again. A blindfolded man now occupied its restraints.
What the fuck is going on? Where am I? Please! Someone! Anyone help!
The man cried. I tried calling out to him, but the words would not come forth. The grinding of unseen mechanics preceded the appearance of two shining cylinders on either side of the chamber.
What the fuck is that? Someone get me the hell out of here!
The blindfolded man shouted, as several clawed tendrils emerged from the cylinders and surrounded him. The claws shaped themselves into blades and descended upon the suspended subject. The man shrieked in pain as his flesh was penetrated. I felt bile rising, and I covered my mouth with my hands. As cynical as I am, I did not wish to see this man be mutilated beyond recognition. But I was unable to close my eyes. The man's moribund wails were cut short by a final impalement to the jugular. Fresh blood fell from his open mouth and mingled with the rest of his bleeding wounds. The blades retracted from the anatomy as an enlarged tendril appeared behind the chamber and attached itself to the man's bare cranium. The restraints that held the lacerated body evaporated as it was lifted into the illumination above the structure, where it was surrounded by additional machinery, and a series of needles skewered the blindfold, penetrating the eyes beneath. As rivers of red flowed down the man's face, I felt the limits of my endurance slipping away as the visage of horrific mechanization drifted into the ether and the familiar textures returned. I probably should have been paying attention to what the uniformed man standing at the bottom of the steps was telling me. Instead, I sat on my front porch, examining the glowing ember making its way down the cigarette I held, and reflected on the decision I made years ago to ignore the health risks of my daily habit. I found it ironic that I could not self-terminate, but I also didn't see the value of preserving my life. I suppose slowly killing myself with tobacco sticks was a compromise. If I exited this world lying on a hospital bed with tubes up my nose, who would honestly give a shit? We're all heading to some kind of afterlife, right? And maybe it'll be a paradise where things like cancer, betrayal, and vanity don't exist, and we all coincide as a collective in blissful peace and harmony. Or maybe everything just stops. Forever. Whatever the case, until the corrosion of time liberated me, the world of consequence would be my domain. The officer standing outside my front porch examined his notepad as he went through the passionless notions.
Julia said that you two recently went through a difficult separation, and she came here yesterday to get the rest of her belongings. She also mentioned something about a necklace. She says that you told her that you threw everything out. Is that true?
While still watching the cancerous vapors evaporate into the world, I responded to the man with the badge. No, it wasn't a separation. It was a severance. The officer only offered a puzzled look as he stood there with his open notepad. I continued. The word separation implies that two people came to a mutual agreement. There was nothing mutual about the situation whatsoever. I felt the officer's judgmental eyes sizing me up as I put out the cigarettes in the ashtray next to me. Ah, I knew that look. Another person off-put by thorough observation and understanding. The man with the badge can think what he likes. His satisfaction and suspicions were not important to me. It all comes down to what he can prove. A concept that was not lost on me when I discarded Julia's things, along with that ugly-ass necklace. I watched the last bit of smoke disappear from the pile of ash before I offered the man with the badge self-serving falsehoods. To answer your question, I didn't throw anything out. And I don't know where her necklace is. As far as I'm aware, she took all of her things with her when she moved out 3 weeks ago.
She told us a very different story. And she has a witness that corroborated everything.
Oh, you mean the stud that she left me for? That guy's taken her side. Shocker. My sarcasm wasn't usually this obvious, but I felt it was warranted. Look, officer. She's either mistaken, or she's wasting your time. We were together for 3 years, and I can speak from experience when I say, Julia can put on a good sob story. She came here yesterday with her witness, and expected me to just allow them to poke around inside my house. I looked the uniformed man in the eyes with a smirk. Well, there's only so much a guy can take, am I right? There existed a conniving man inside Charles Sebastian Crawford, and he was well-versed in the art of deception, The man with the badge was bound by the esoteric law, although mighty, under the right circumstances, it could be manipulated. The officer nodded. I could tell that he recognized I wasn't going to make this easy for Julia. Having no avenue to refute my version of events, his next words carried a hint of relief.
So it's your word against hers.
Translation: this is now a matter of civil litigation, and it's no longer my problem. I offered a genuine smile. Looks that way, officer. The man jotted something down in his notepad before snapping it shut. He did not offer a bid farewell as he began to walk back towards his patrol car, which sat where the dynasty had the day before. I predicted that he would simply board his cruiser and drive off. Perhaps he'd call Julia at some point and give her the bad news. Much to my surprise, he instead stopped mid-stride and said something in a noticeably monotone voice.
There is darkness within you, friend.
The remark from the police officer, who had previously seemed slightly annoyed and severely disinterested in the situation, had actually struck a chord with me, forcing me to leave my own minds and be one with reality. I stood up from my chair. What did you just say? The man with the badge looked over his shoulder, revealing the left side of his face. His one visible eye glowed in contrast to his dark complexion. I thought I had him figured out the moment he exited his car. He was just a mundane enforcer of the law. However, his glowing eye suggested something of an enigmatic nature. The monotone voice came again, carrying methodically vague undertones.
You are beyond my reach. I can only hope that your better nature prevails.
The voice belongs to someone who might have had the answers to the many questions that plagued my restless mind. But all I did was stand there, dumbfounded, and watched as the officer got back into his patrol car and disappeared down the street. I sat back down and attempted to piece together the events that had just unfolded before my eyes. In my 30 years of existence, I've never been this perplexed by something, and I found it invigorating. After 30 minutes of deliberation, I had come to the conclusion that the officer's words were not his own. Something had spoken through him. If I tracked him down and asked the officer to explain himself, he would likely not remember anything, and would probably write me a citation for driving with expired tags. It occurred to me that the stranger with the luminous eyes was somehow connected to my nocturnal travels, but perhaps in an adversarial way. This was nothing more than my mind drawing wild speculations. Suddenly, there came a familiar, yet out of place, noise from inside my house. Everyone knows that sound a camera makes when the shutter snaps a picture. I could think of no earthly reason why that sound would be coming from my dwelling. I stood in the open doorway for several minutes before cautiously entering. The corridor led to the kitchen, which had a connecting bathroom on the far side. I estimated that this was the origin of the disturbance. As I approached, the sharp noise became louder. I carefully peeked around the archway to see that the bathroom door was open. A curvy figure dressed in a short skirt that left little to the imagination stood before the vanity. I exited the hallway and positioned myself perpendicular to the bathroom door, bewildered by the sight of a woman in my home. Though she had her back turned to me, I couldn't help but feel slightly aroused. Her tight black outfit revealed a fine pair of legs that led up to a heart-shaped backside. Her upper body was covered by a tight black sweatshirt that outlined a toned physique. The hair was dark and fell into place at all the right angles. This was the body of a woman who belonged on a billionaire's yacht off the coast of Dubai. considering the rewards this world offers to such exceptional beauty, further vexed me as to why this specimen was in my house, apparently taking pictures of herself. However, in my experience, having an attractive shell does not guarantee a sound mind. In fact, quite the contrary. But at the end of the day, the world's best-looking intruder is still an intruder, and must be dealt with as such.
Who are you, and what are you doing in my house?
The figure's head perked up, then slowly turned to face me. A pair of piercing violet eyes caused me to stagger and fall. The woman's facial features were a visage of duality, smooth, toned skin that ended just under the eyes. The entire lower half of her face was of a skeletal nature. Amused by my terror, the woman let out a morbid laugh as she emerged from the bathroom doorway. A voice crackled from inside the rows of unmoving silver teeth.
Hello there. I'm the Defiler. Don't you think I'm pretty?
Her violet eyes flashed, followed by the rapid-fire sounds of a snapping shutter.
Such beautiful fear.
I was bound by terror, paralyzed to my kitchen floor. I looked on and whimpered like a wounded dog waiting to be put out of its misery. The Defiler's optic hue gleamed as she tilted her head to one side.
It's time for you to sleep now.
She revealed a black cavity embedded into the palm of her left hand, and a spiral of violet energy came forth and formed a helix of light that overcame me. My fear was overtaken by involuntary lethargy, and the sight of the tinted light soon faded, as I plummeted into the depths once again. I felt the gravity of my insignificance as I walked upon a black surface, looking out into an abyss that could not be seen, as a thunder of celestial emanations echoed above. A path was soon illuminated by a forming gloom on the horizon. As I approached, I saw pulsating forms writhing in the darkness, as a cacophony of sickening lamentations and moans of pleasure oozed from them. These repulsive masses extended into the gloom, and I could decipher moving limbs and bobbing heads as they groped, licked, and gnawed at each other. I noticed a hooded figure standing among the debauchery. It then began to make its way towards me. I felt the fear begin to stir within me. However, a snap cut through the soundscape, and I felt my trepidation instantly melt away as the silhouettes emerged from the obscurity. Beneath a dark cloak was a pale face that donned a black blindfold with several needles that skewered the areas where the eyes would have been. A familiar violet glow radiated from the tips of the protrusions. We awkwardly faced each other as the moving masses continued their perverted recreations. A raspy voice came from its black lips, breaking the stagnation.
I have temporarily suppressed your fear to converse with you.
Who are you? And what is this place?
I do not have a name. I have a title granted to me by the one I serve. I am the Foreseer. We reside in the domain of Ophiomorphis.
What the cloaked man said didn't mean anything to me, but somehow made perfect sense.
What the hell am I doing here?
The Foreseer offered no explanation. Instead, he folded his gaunt hands together under his cloak and walked past me.
Come and walk with me, Charles.
The cloaked man and I walked along the moaning masses in awkward silence. I gathered that the question that I asked before did not have a simple answer. After taking in my macabre surroundings, I decided to ask a more obvious question. What are they?
The remnants of wasted potential. They wait to be devoured by the one I serve. Until then, though, they wallow in their own primitive urges.
Is this what will become of me?
That depends on if you allow the limitations of your mortal perception to consume you.
What the hell does that mean? And you never answered my earlier question. Why am I here?
There is only so much I can reveal to you. We did not seek you out. You came to us. You will inevitably come to a crossroads where you must make a choice.
The Foreseer shifted his head to look out into the terrain of wasted potential. I had silently deduced that even though the creature's eyes were surely destroyed, he did not need them to see. Could you be any more vague? Should I even ask why you have 9-inch nails sticking out of your eyes? The Foreseer let out an amused chuckle without breaking stride as he approached a console located at the very end of the path, just before it dropped off into a massive gorge. His next words were deliberate and cunning as a gaunt hand appeared from the cloak and rested on one of the console's metallic levers.
The real question is, do you want to understand?
The ground beneath us began to rumble as a tumult of agonized wailing erupted from the surrounding heaps. I lost my footing and fell onto the rough gravel. The blackness before us took on a liquid property and gathered at the center of the canyon before it formed into a familiar shape. I stood to my feet as a towering form reflected in my eyes. It was the same construct I saw in the gloom, the monolith. During my awestruck stupor, a rectangular platform appeared beneath the Foreseer and carried him out into the gorge where it hovered at the right side of the monolith. The console simultaneously disappeared into the gravel, leaving me with a perfect view. A second platform appeared perpendicular to the Foreseer before it was engulfed by a helix of violet light, and a shape appeared upon the platform. The mass congealed and twisted into a pair of humanoid figures engaged in intercourse. Following the moans of climax, the figures liquefied and united, and the amalgamation contorted into a shapely female body as black substance crawled up her flawless skin, covering her breasts and vulva. The woman placed her hands over her face as she screamed in agony. Red rivers fell between her fingers, and her wails of pain transformed into sadistic, uncontrolled laughter. Soon, the woman removed her hands, and the horrifying face of the Defiler was revealed. The Foreseer and the Defiler turned to face the monolith as the violet energy reappeared on its exterior. The light formed a vertical line and then elevated itself from the surface. A low hum emanated from the luminescence as it began to separate, creating a three-dimensional opening. The visage of a face wearing a metallic respirator appeared in a rippling projection, and violet light flickered from within soulless black eyes. A distorted voice resonated from the aperture. The Foreseer raised one of his gaunt hands, and with a snap of his finger, primal fear came rushing back through my veins. I made to escape, but the path behind me had vanished beneath a mass of writhing limbs and groaning faces. I fell to my knees, clutching my beating heart, and began to hyperventilate. I had to regain control of myself. Through panicked breaths, I reasoned that the three creatures had brought me to this place for some reason. If they wanted me dead, they would have already ended my life. If I was to prevent my assimilation into the piles of despair that littered this place, I would have to listen to what they had to say. Truthfully, I've had my fill of cryptic imagery and vague explanations. Whatever this was had to be more important than my fear. I stood to my feet and turned to face the trio behind me.
"Are you ready?"
The distorted voice came again. Despite the nightmarish appearance of the figure, the words sounded as if they were spoken by a man of reason. I responded with a simple, "Yes."
"Very well,"
said the distorted voice, as the rippling projection poured onto a third platform that was centered between the others. The cascading matter formed a hovering shape. Its armor emitted a dull shine as the gears embedded in its design rotated like clockwork. A network of tubes pumped black fluids into exposed veins, and a cylindrical headgear towered above all. I felt as if I was in the presence of a deity, and I should be bowing my head. "You are the emissary."
"That is accurate,"
the creature confirmed, raising his tube-riddled arms to either side.
"We are the three disciples of the great god of the void. She who seeks on mortal dreams, the serpent of the celestial realms. Theomorphous."
"Why is your god so fucking interested in me? It looks like he has plenty of food from what I can see."
"Your emotions are a symptom of your mortal perceptions."
During the late hours of the night, my mind traveled to some faraway place beyond the constraints of known reality. I found myself walking through a void of darkness, my involuntary stride upon the unseen ground guiding me through the endless realm. I eventually entered a domain tinted by twilight. A dark monolith stood at the center of the bleak illumination. I approached the standing apparatus with a mixture of dreadful caution and morbid fascination. Though its design was rudimentary, its placement within the gloom held some unknown significance. A violet shine appeared upon the construct's surface, disrupting the gray and black patterns surrounding me. The light contorted until it shaped into a horrid face that donned a metallic respirator, connected to a series of tubes that disappeared into its torso. Its soulless black eyes glared at me with the malice of an evil reflection, causing me to take frantic steps back. The configuration approached the transparent threshold and hovered into the pervading twilight. Looking upon the complexity of the creature's design was like watching someone burn to death. Terrifying, yet intriguing. It wore a cyclopean armor embedded with rusted gears that rotated as it moved. Its arms were an amalgamation of tubing networked across exposed muscles. A cylindrical headgear surmounted the figure, making it resemble a great pharaoh. The gravity of my lack of understanding summoned a gripping fear that caused me to fall backward. I gazed upon the elevated conundrum as it moved towards me with an unnatural grace. Its shadow towered over me, and a violet hue flickered from inside its dark eyes as a distorted voice resounded from its respirator.
"Do not be frightened. I am the emissary. Your arrival should thrive that your potential will be fulfilled if that is what you desire. However, you must first shed your mortal perception."
The mysterious being in the realm of twilight faded into the familiar textures of my bedroom ceiling. I lay there, listening to the soft rattle of the table fan that rested on the nightstands next to my bed, while I examined the nonsensical patterns above me. One could argue that I left one nightmare and woke into another. I came to my silent conclusions about the thing that called itself the emissary. The rusted cogs, the network of tubes, the towering headgear that resembled a massive piston. I'd seen all of these things before at some point in my meaningless life. Dreams will construct things from random information stored inside the brain. Although the results can be interesting, they were essentially meaningless. The mystery of the emissary had been solved by a man still in his underwear, staring up at his squiggly ceiling. My eyes averted to the window that sat adjacent to my bed, and I watched the faint light of the dawn bloom into a bright sunrise. A cloud of smoke expelled from my lungs as I sat on my front porch, thinking about the ruins of my life. My thumb moved across a plastic screen as digital images of happier times scrolled past. I could not look at them without my soul being overwhelmed by anger and regret. The inner turmoil would soon have me pondering questions of a philosophical nature, bordering on self-pity. If two people love each other, why can't they just be together? But why isn't that ever enough? Why wasn't I enough? No matter how many hours I spent on the internet, combing through online forums or watching videos that told me my anger was justified, it did little to lift my spirit. Society can change, but human nature will always remain the same. This world has little sympathy for a broken man, and the depths of my damage were invisible to those around me. My thoughts were interrupted as I observed, with disdain, a maroon Dodge Dynasty pulling into my driveway. Die, nasty. I knew who it was, and I had absolutely no intention of standing up and walking out to greet them with disingenuous pleasantries. The girl I once knew exited the passenger side door of the vehicle. Her jeans did very little to hide the loveliness of her figure as she made her way to the front porch.
"Hello, Charles."
A once familiar voice spoke. I set down my cigarette on the ashtray next to me and watched the smoke rise from the burning ember, then begrudgingly offered the coldest of responses. "Hello, Julia." I looked into her green eyes and thought about how we used to make love on top of the washing machine in my garage. The memory of her soft moans reminiscent of a unity I thought would last forever. However, fate hardly ever caters to such expectations.
"How are you doing?"
"Peachy," I responded. My eyes averted to the dynasty still sitting in the driveway with its engine running, A man sat in its driver's seat and stared back at me with intense apprehension. I decided to ask the obvious. Was David here? The look in Julia's eyes suggested that she predicted this line of questioning, but had held out hope that she wouldn't have to explain to me why her upgrade had accompanied her.
Please, Charles, I don't want to fight. I'm just here to get the rest of my things.
Oh, well, you're going to love what I have to say. I picked my cigarette back up and took another drag before enlightening my former lover.
Then you should get back in your car and have Mr. Perfect drive you down to the local dump, because I threw the rest of your shit out.
You did what?
That's right. I put all your stuff into boxes, drove it down to the dumpsters, and tossed them.
Even the necklace my grandmother gave me?
I couldn't help but crack an amused smile. Whatever I had with Julia was dead and buried. What did I have to lose by being honest for once?
Yes, I even threw out that hideous thing.
You son of a bitch!
Julia wailed, tears welling up in her eyes. The commotion caused the driver's side door of the Dynasty to open, and Mr. Perfect emerged from the vehicle.
Is everything all right, Julia?
She turned to him with dripping eyes and unintelligible sobs. It was a truly pathetic display of anguish, but one that I understood all too well. A broken heart can bring out the worst in people, and for me, sorrow eventually turns to cruelty. The intrusive bravado radiating from my driveway was beyond my ability to ignore.
Everything's fine, David. I was just telling Julia here that her belongings no longer reside at this residence.
My words carried a thick, sarcastic undertone to them. My eyes were met with the cold stare of a man who spent at least 3 hours a day lifting weights. He did not seem to appreciate my sense of humor. Mr. Perfect made his way over to Julia and wrapped his veiny arms around her. After whispering something in her ear, Julia collected herself and nodded her head. They began walking back to the Dynasty, still embracing each other. So fucking dramatic. Mr. Perfect opened the passenger side door, and before Julia took a seat, she gave me some parting words.
I will be filing a police report, Charles. You had no right to throw out my stuff, and I will be pressing charges.
I smirked. This was about as close as I would get to settling the score. I'm sorry, Charles. You're just not good enough anymore. I'm going to be with David now because that's what makes me happy. And you don't get a say-so in the matter. You just have to respect my decision. I don't have to respect a damn thing, Julia. Personally, I think a few discarded items is a small price to pay for playing games with my fucking life.
Well, you tell them where to find me, and have a wonderful day.
I said, as I placed the cigarette between my lips. I was met with another hateful scowl as Mr. Perfect backed out of the driveway. I methodically raised my right hand, ensuring he saw the extended middle digit.
A loud rumble bellowed from the Dynasty's engine as it accelerated down the street.
Maybe we can be friends after she's done siphoning you too. I hopelessly thought to myself as I watched the tailgate disappear. The sun sank into the horizon and gave way to the night sky. Julia's visit had left a bad taste in my mouth throughout the day. I hated myself for becoming this vulnerable. My dedication and passion towards her was pure. I wanted to do the right thing in a world dominated by self-serving ambition, yet this sentiment was not reciprocated. My story was another chapter in the tome of human misery. Despite all of this, something inside me, buried beneath an ocean of pain, still yearned for her. I resigned to my resting place and closed my eyes as my memories brought me back to the day of my mother's funeral. The loss of my beloved mother to an unexpected accident had devastated me, the only person who'd ever truly loved me unconditionally. All composure was lost as I squeezed Julia's hand and stared down at my mother's coffin with overflowing eyes. Tragedy forces us to reflect on our own mortality, but the truth is that we don't want to die alone. The loss left a deep crater inside of me, one that would never truly be healed. I might have come to terms with my mother's death had her life ended on a more peaceful note.
As I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for the Spirit of Almighty God is with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me.
The preacher's words offered no solace as I imagined my mother's horrified face, illuminated by the headlights of an oncoming semi-truck, before it utterly obliterated her. The eulogy became indecipherable murmurs as I was consumed by somnolence. The world of shadow welcomed me once again as I traversed through its sightless continuum. A dreadful dissonance echoed in the surrounding darkness like the melody of feasting gluttons. Like before, I was led to a sanctuary of twilight, where a dark construct stood. Its appearance instantly reminded me of the mechanical stranger who spoke to me during my last visit. The emissary. As soon as the recognition crossed my subconscious, a prodigious beam of blinding light descended from the unseen heavens and illuminated the dark form before me. The light revealed an ominous metal chamber equipped with various straps and chains. Its revelation was accompanied by an unearthly reverberation. The sounds became a deafening crescendo as a black, twisted mass ascended from the depths of the gloom. I gazed upon the erected mound of screaming faces and writhing limbs with a terror unmatched by any previous experience. The shapeless form engulfed the chamber, sending arches from beneath its thick surface towards its pinnacle. A repulsive, belching noise resounded from within the mass as fluids were projected from the faces near its summit. The vile apparition began to recede back into the gloom, and the screams of despair faded. The chamber became visible again. A blindfolded man now occupied its restraints.
What the fuck is going on? Where am I? Please! Someone! Anyone help!
The man cried. I tried calling out to him, but the words would not come forth.
The grinding of unseen mechanics preceded the appearance of two shining cylinders on either side of the chamber.
What the fuck is that? Someone get me the hell out of here!
The blindfolded man shouted as several clawed tendrils emerged from the cylinders and surrounded him. The claws shaped themselves into blades and descended upon the suspended subject. The man shrieked in pain as his flesh was penetrated. I felt bile rising, and I covered my mouth with my hands. As cynical as I am, I did not wish to see this man be mutilated beyond recognition. But I was unable to close my eyes. The man's moribund wails were cut short by a final impalement to the jugular. Fresh blood fell from his open mouth and mingled with the rest of his bleeding wounds. The blades retracted from the anatomy as an enlarged tendril appeared behind the chamber and attached itself to the man's bare cranium. The restraints that held the lacerated body evaporated as it was lifted into the illumination above the structure, where it was surrounded by additional machinery, and a series of needles skewered the blindfold, penetrating the eyes beneath. As rivers of red flowed down the man's face, I felt the limits of my endurance slipping away as the visage of horrific mechanization drifted into the ether, and the familiar textures returned. I probably should have been paying attention to what the uniformed man standing at the bottom of the steps was telling me. Instead, I sat on my front porch, examining the glowing...
Fireworks exploding wildly in multicolored bursts above David's head drowned out the sound of his wet heaving as he vomited a six-pack's worth of beer at his feet. He chuckled to himself as he spat and tried to detach the long, slimy strand of phlegm hanging from his lips with a shake of his head.
How do you know when it's time to stop drinking? When all the beer's gone?
He took a few shambling steps over to the nearest tree and leaned an arm against it to steady his balance. With his free hand, he lit a cigarette he'd stolen from his father's pack and breathed the smoky flavor in, the bitter acid taste of bile mixing with the fumes at the back of his throat and choking it. He coughed hard 3 times and spat again, and then returned the cigarette to his lips and inhaled. Still leaning awkwardly against the tree, he fumbled with the zipper on his jeans, carefully pulled himself out below, pissed whatever beer was still in his system out to join the rest of the soggy mess on the forest floor. After a couple more drags on the cigarette, he lowered it down past his belt and put it out using his own active stream. It was the 4th of July, 1976, and he was standing in the middle of a newly abandoned World War II military base in Cromwell, Connecticut. Located at the top of a wooded hill, he'd driven up the winding dirt road with his headlights off so as to not attract attention, and parked carefully off the road in the shadow of one of the gutted barrack buildings. It was one of the most isolated spots in the state, and he had visited it before several times when his desire for privacy outweighed his urge to attend parties. After he finished, he zipped himself up and took a few clumsy steps out of the trees and back towards his car. The bright flashes from the light show above casting long shadows branching out from his unsteady feet in several directions. He climbed into the driver's seat of the bulky Ford Thunderbird and slammed the door behind him. From the front seat, Kelly immediately snapped at him.
What took you so long? I've been losing my mind sitting here alone in the dark. It's creepy up here.
Don't be a wimp. There's nothing up here that can hurt you. Been alone all here all night 12 times.
You could have at least left me the keys so I could listen to the radio. Why are we even up here? You said this was the best place to watch the fireworks, but there are way too many trees in the way.
Yeah, that was a lie. I didn't bring us up here to watch the fireworks.
Then why are we even up here?
Kelly crossed her arms and gave David an indignant look. David lazily draped his right arm across the back of the seat and around her shoulders. He smiled a slack-jawed, drunken smirk and looked her in the eye.
You know why.
Kelly's face went from stern to confused, and then quickly to concerned.
You can't be serious. This is only our second date. Besides, you said you wouldn't pressure me.
That was before I saw you in that blouse.
David used his arm to pull her closer to him, and he slipped his right hand down the front of her shirt to cup her breast with a clammy paw. Kelly jerked herself backwards and away from him.
Don't touch me, David. You're drunk, and your breath smells like puke. I want you to take me home.
What the fuck did you just say to me?
David grabbed her face roughly and pulled her forward so they were face to face, his fingers digging hard into her cheek.
I'm the youngest football captain in the school's history. I'm the one guy in our class with his own car. You were the one who followed me to the parking lot last week and asked me to take you out.
Kelly had her hands desperately clutched around David's wrist and was trying to squirm away from him, but David grabbed her shirt with his other hand tearing away 3 buttons as he dragged her closer to him.
You know how many girls I could have asked out tonight? And now you have the fucking nerve to say no to me?
Kelly shouted through David's meaty hand around her mouth.
David, let go! You're hurting me!
David looked into her eyes for another few seconds before releasing her, causing her to recoil backwards against the passenger door. Angry tears rolled down her cheeks and over the deep marks David's fingernails had left in her cheeks.
Stop crying, you're fine.
Kelly looked down at her torn shirt hanging open, exposing her bra, and covered herself with her arms. For a few moments she just stared at him in furious shock and disbelief.
Bethany told me she bruised her arm at cheerleading, but you did that to her, didn't you?
David belched and tasted beer and vomit at the back of his throat again.
We've been waiting 3 weeks. I wasn't going to wait forever.
Kelly reached forward and slapped him. Disoriented and livid by the sudden assault, David awkwardly lunged forward and grabbed her again. Kelly kicked at him as he clawed at her skirt, tearing it in 2 places.
Get off me!
Kelly planted a kick directly into his gut, causing David to grunt and lose his grip on her. She frantically clawed at the door handle and forced it open, but tripped over her torn skirt, slipping down her legs, and fell to the ground. David reached into the glove compartment and grabbed a pair of sharp pliers. Before he'd even realized he was doing it, he lunged out of the car and stabbed Kelly in the lower back as she struggled to stand. The pliers made a soft, wet, squelching sound as they punctured her flesh, and Kelly screamed. She began to cry out for help as she half ran, half crawled into the empty barracks building. David watched her disappear into the darkness in confusion, surprised that he had just savagely stabbed her like that. He looked down at the blood dripping onto the ground off of the pliers, still clasped in his hand, and licked his lips. That had been a stupid thing to do. He obviously couldn't let her tell anyone what he'd done. He'd probably be arrested, which would result in his getting expelled from school and ruin his chances of playing college football. He couldn't allow her to destroy his life like that.
Kelly, come back. I just want to talk.
He followed her into the darkness of the abandoned building, cold and hollow like a tomb. The pliers held behind his back, the blood staining the back of his shirt. There was no way for her screams to be heard over the sound of the fireworks, which lasted another 10 minutes, shattering in the skies above them. David only needed 4. As the chime of the first bell of the new school year reverberated down the halls of the high school corridors, Darcy ducked into the girls' restroom for a final quick inspection before classes started. While most high school students regarded the bell as a harbinger of doom, like the first gunshot that ignites a battle and starts everyone praying they'll survive, Darcy saw the bell as the start of something wondrous and exciting. Having recently moved to the area, she was eager to attend classes surrounded by new faces and make a great first impression. She made sure her makeup was flawless, that her hair was behaving, and that her outfit was making the right statement. Her blouse was perhaps a little too modest, but better a little caution than a great regret. She smiled at her reflection in the mirror, proud to see confidence in the eyes staring back at her.
Girl, you're going to fit right in.
As she picked up her bag and made to leave the bathroom, she noticed a large black spider with 7 legs crawling across the tiled floor in the direction of the door leading to the hallway. She paused and knelt down, placing her hand in the path of the roaming spider, and scooped it up nimbly into her palm as it made to crawl across her skin.
Hey there, little friend. Trust me, you don't want to go that way. You'll get stepped on heading in that direction. Here, I'll put you somewhere safe.
Darcy stood up and walked back over to the sink. Placing one of her feet on the porcelain basin and using her hand to grab the windowsill, she lifted herself up just enough to extend her outstretched hand outside the window onto the outer sill. She tried to set the spider down safely, but frowned as the tiny insect instead ran up her wrist and down her shirt sleeve.
Outside won't work for you, huh? Okay, you can stay with me. But let's find some place where no one will notice you.
As the tiny stowaway crawled up her arm, past her shoulder and onto her neck, she carefully picked up the fragile body between her thumb and forefinger and held it up to her face.
Don't squirm, okay? This won't hurt a bit.
She opened her mouth wide and placed the spider as far back on her tongue as she could. Then she closed her mouth and gently swallowed. As she made her way back towards the bathroom door, she stopped for one more brief look into the mirror.
Oh yeah, definitely going to fit right in.
Sitting at the back of the classroom, Justin couldn't keep from biting his nails. It was a recurring bad habit he'd unfortunately never been able to successfully break. He hated the fact he couldn't control it. Aside from the bitter taste it left in his mouth, it made his nails a wreckage of short, jagged, and often slimy nubs. Normally the instinct to bite them only came when he was bored or anxious, kind of like a nervous tic. But he suspected the reason it had become worse now than ever before wasn't because of anxiety, but frustration. Sitting directly in front of him, close enough to reach out and strangle, was David Talbot, the most well-known and well-loved student in the entire school. Aside from being the football captain and one of the best students in their senior class, his family was richer than the Beatles, and he caught the eye of every young lady as he walked down the halls. He was one of those rare people who seemed irritatingly perfect in every way, from how he charmed the girls and inspired the guys, to how he always managed to sweet-talk his teachers and coaches into thinking he could do no wrong. But Justin knew better. It had been several weeks ago when summer had first started. Justin had been returning home on foot late one night from seeing a movie with his friends when he'd heard something coming from the direction of the park. At first he thought it was the sound of a child crying, but when he approached the chain-link fence to peer into the darkness of the empty baseball diamond, he'd seen a young man pinning an even younger woman against the bleachers, shaking her, lightly trying to quiet her sobs. Justin had been about to call out when the young man had struck the girl hard across the face with a closed fist, sending her crashing into the dirt. Justin had sprinted around the fence across the baseline towards the young lady as the young man furiously stomped towards his car and sped off into the night. Justin had remembered how foolish he'd felt when his first thought had been how the car had looked an awful lot like David Thunderbird, but he'd immediately dismissed that notion. There was no way David would ever strike a woman. He was a perfect gentleman without a vicious bone in his body. It had to have been someone else in a similar car, he reassured himself, but when he recognized his classmate Caroline crying and bleeding on the ground and helped her up, she confirmed his initial belief that it had been David after all. Caroline had lost a tooth and was bleeding heavily from her nose and a split lip. Apparently the punch Justin had witnessed hadn't been the first one of the evening. Caroline had allowed Justin to walk her home after making him swear he wouldn't tell anyone what he'd seen, and she informed her parents she'd clumsily fallen down the library stairs in the dark. David had threatened that if she told anyone what he'd done, he would murder her little brother at summer camp and make it look like an accident. Justin doubted it was more than a bluff, but even if it wasn't, Caroline wasn't willing to take the chance. Suddenly, the awful realization sank into his marrow that no one would likely believe him anyway. David was far more trusted and liked than himself, with far more friends. Without proof, or at the very least Caroline's word to support his own, no one was likely to take him seriously. Caroline had moved away to live with an aunt shortly after the incident, but Justin remained determined to expose David for the monster he was, even if he had to do it alone. He tried speaking to several girls David had previously dated over the past few years, but those who even agreed to talk to him were too afraid of exposing David for fear that he'd retaliate against them or simply be labeled as liars. And then, the unthinkable had happened. a young lady named Kelly had gone missing over the summer, and while several people had voiced their sympathy to David that his new girlfriend had apparently abandoned him, Justin suspected otherwise. He believed in his bones that David had killed her. At the head of the classroom, the door suddenly swung open, and a young lady walked in, surveyed the room for a moment, and selected a seat in the front row. Well, Justin couldn't help but stare. Directly in front of him, he heard David whisper,
"Holy shit, pile."
Justin actually leaned forward in his seat to get a better look at the girl's back. She was absolutely stunning. Her strawberry blonde hair fell gracefully down the sides of her heart-shaped face, complementing her stunning green eyes and full lips. Her figure was elegant, and her walk had been confident and graceful. She was the type of girl you'd fantasize about after seeing her on a magazine cover. As their teacher asked her to stand up and introduce herself to the class, Justin immediately felt a sinking sensation in his chest. In front of him, David was eyeing her the way a lion would stare at an antelope, with a primal, selfish hunger, selecting it as his own to hunt and catch. Justin clenched his fist as his wet, broken nails pinched him painfully. He would not let another poor girl fall prey to David's violence. He'd get to her first and warn her, even if it made him sound like a desperate, jealous freak. As far as the school was concerned, David was already groomed and ready to be crowned homecoming king, and Justin knew he wouldn't settle for anything less than this new girl as his queen. From the front of the room, the new girl addressed the class.
"Hello, everyone. I'm Darcy, and I'm so excited to be here and to meet you all. I hope I make a great impression and get to know each of you really soon."
Again, Justin heard David whisper,
"Oh, much sooner than you think."
Darcy walked down the school's front steps and made her way over to the small memorial by the fountain. It was the midday lunch break, and while most students were socializing in their cafeteria or making quick trips home to see their families, Darcy had decided to pay her respects to a young girl who, unfortunately, could no longer do either. A framed picture of Kelly had been set up on a small easel between two sagging bouquets of flowers, and over the past several weeks, students had been leaving trinkets and notes by the picture to commemorate their lost friend. Even though the police had never found a body, many among the community were starting to assume she was dead, or at the very least, would not be seen again. Darcy placed a small, potted daisy on the ground in front of the picture, and as she pulled out her handkerchief to delicately wipe the smudges off the portrait, she whispered to herself,
"Beauty awakens the soul to act."
She knelt slowly and removed a pocket knife from somewhere within her sleeve. Opening the short blade, she cut herself without hesitating between her middle fingers on her left hand and let the blood drip down off her fingertips and onto the daisy's fragile white petals.
"From a small spark may burst a great flame."
A voice suddenly came from behind her.
"That sounds like Shakespeare."
Darcy turned to look upwards at the young man with the dark curly hair and a sullen expression who now stood behind her, his hands in his pockets and his eyes on Kelly's photo.
"It's Dante, actually."
Darcy stood, wrapping her bleeding hand with her handkerchief and casually hiding it behind her back.
"I saw you at the back of class earlier. I think you were the only guy in the room looking at me and not my body."
"I need to talk to you. Can we go somewhere more private?"
Darcy raised a playful eyebrow.
"Ooh, I think you missed a few steps, Fonzie. First, you're supposed to compliment my outfit and buy me a milkshake. Then, for the next several weeks, you buy me gifts, whisper sweet nothings into my ear, and endure my boring stories before we do any talking in private. Then, you can meet my parents."
Justin blushed and let out an uncomfortable laugh.
That's honestly not what I meant."
"Aw, you got my hopes up. You're certainly not hard on the eyes. You just need to work on your icebreakers.
Let's start again. I'm Darcy, and I'm sure you're flattered to meet me.
She raised her right hand and flipped a strand of Justin's dark curls away from his eye. Justin awkwardly fumbled for a response.
I'm Justin. But seriously, Darcy, I need to talk to you about something important. You may be in danger.
Darcy smirked and tossed her hair innocently over her shoulder.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. What sort of danger? Some kind of new girl hazing? Oh, are the mean old cheerleaders going to pour sand in my purse or steal my bra and lock it in the trophy case?
Justin felt the urgency of what he had to tell her trickling away out of his head like water through cracks in the sidewalk. He couldn't understand what was happening. Every time Darcy spoke to him or looked him in the eye, he felt like he was under some kind of spell. It was as though her words were a perfume that were steadily coaxing him into a dreamlike haze, and all he could do was to stare at her full lips and imagine the sensation of kissing her so hard it took her breath away. He was never this frustratingly tongue-tied around girls. Normally he was very confident and charming and left the young ladies giggling, but at this moment he could barely string a coherent sentence together in his mind. Darcy patiently waited for him to respond, tilting her head back and forth in a clearly fake but nevertheless cute expression of curiosity and fascination. Justin finally summoned the words and they tumbled from his mouth as gracefully as rocks off a rusty shovel.
David Talbot is going to try to hurt you.
Darcy's eyes went wide for a split second in shock, before returning to their steady, tantalizing gaze.
That football stud all the girls swoon over who thinks he sweats liquid gold?
Yes. Look, I don't have any proof, but he's physically hurt every girl he's ever dated. Possibly worse. I had to warn...
Darcy cut him off by putting a slender finger to his lips.
Easy there, handsome. He's walking up behind you.
Justin glanced over his shoulder. David was walking towards them with two of his friends flanking him on either side like marble pillars. Justin turned around in panic to look at Darcy, but she just smiled and winked.
We're talking about Mr. Reed's new car. Play it cool.
When David was only a few steps away, Darcy raised her voice as if she was having a very engaging conversation with Justin.
Can you believe the color he chose, though? I didn't know they came in wet, hickey purple. It's honestly like he's driving around in a soggy eggplant.
David placed himself directly next to Justin and injected himself into their conversation as though it were a football huddle.
We talking about Mr. Reed's car? Christ, we were just talking about that. A homosexual circus clown wouldn't have picked that color.
David extended his hand and took Darcy's gently in his own.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I had to introduce myself. I'm David, and these goons behind me are Alex and Fred. Wanted to make sure you were feeling welcome among us.
David opened his coat and pulled out a pink rosebud and carefully clipped it to Darcy's blouse.
Beautiful girl like yourself doesn't need such decoration, of course, but I thought it would compliment your hair nicely and hopefully remind you that we're thrilled to have you attending school with us.
He bent down and delicately kissed Darcy's hand, causing her to blush.
Justin, pay attention, because this is how you flirt.
Justin rolled his eyes and gritted his teeth in frustration.
It's a pleasure to meet you and your friends, David. I don't remember their names, but it's okay, because they didn't get me a flower.
David and his friends chuckled.
You just made my day. I'm so pleased to meet such a gentleman. I was worried none of the guys at this school would see me as anything more than a nice pair of legs.
Not to me, you're not. No, your legs are pretty stunning.
Darcy giggled.
Oh, golly, stop it. I'm going to blush so hard my cheeks will burn.
I can't help it. You got such a lovely smile.
Justin couldn't take it anymore. He practically snarled at David like a rabid dog.
Don't you have to be at practice, David?
David gave Justin a disinterested glance.
Not for another 10 minutes. Coach is at a teacher's conference. What brings you here anyway, Justin? didn't think you knew Kelly.
Darcy quickly intervened.
I asked him to meet me here, actually. I didn't know Kelly, but I wanted to pay my respects and leave her some flowers. Justin was going to show me where the music hall was before the break ended.
David smiled.
That's actually on the way to the field. I'd be happy to escort you there.
I thought you'd never ask. Let me just go grab my violin.
She gave David a playful wink before picking up her purse and heading back towards the main school building. Tossing her hand into the air, she called out behind her without looking back.
Thanks anyway, Justin. Talk to you later.
David clapped Justin on the shoulder a little harder than was necessary.
Better luck next time, brother.
Justin tried to bite his tongue, but couldn't stop the angry tirade from spilling out of his mouth like overflow from a leaking dam.
You've just got them all fooled, don't you?
David and his friends turned to look him in the eye.
What did you just say?
How can you stand there flirting and pinning a flower shamelessly on another girl when there's a memorial of your missing former girlfriend right next to you?
David took a step closer to Justin, their faces only inches apart.
I've made my peace with Kelly's disappearance. If you haven't, I don't really give a shit. But if you ever talk down to me like that again, I'm gonna make sure your death looks like a suicide.
David cuffed Justin across the chin with the back of his hand and walked past him towards the school. Alex and Fred chuckled as they turned to follow their puppet master like the zombies they were. Justin scowled and rubbed the side of his cheek. His pride hurt worse than his face. From a back pocket, he pulled a sealed envelope and laid it down in front of Kelly's picture.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner, and I'm sorry I wasn't there to save you.
Justin then turned and walked off in the opposite direction David and the others had gone. What he'd failed to notice as he set the envelope down, however, was that the formerly white daisy Darcy had set upon the ground before the easel had changed into a stunning blood-red color, with a small black spider with seven legs crawling delicately up the stem. Over the course of the following weeks, David and Darcy were rarely seen apart from each other. Very few students were surprised by this. In fact, most were overjoyed. The two of them seemed like the very definition of a match made in heaven. Both were excellent students and natural leaders who inspired those around them, while also receiving accolades for their extracurricular activities. Every day before classes began, they met outside the front of the school where David would present her with a little token of some kind, be it a charm for her necklace or a small box of chocolates, and she would rest her head on his shoulder as they sat on the stairs and talked as they watched the other students arrive. Justin kept a watchful eye on them from afar, waiting for the first bruise to show up on Darcy's face, desperate for another opportunity to speak with Darcy alone. His patience was finally rewarded one day after school when David and his team were running a mile through the backwoods, and therefore Darcy wouldn't be watching him from the bleachers. Justin watched as they shared a kiss on the field before David and his team jogged off, and Darcy picked up her violin case and headed towards the music hall alone. Justin made himself wait a full minute to make sure David and his cronies were completely out of sight, and then walked into the music hall. Justin peeked into the classroom at about a dozen or so students preparing to rehearse, but Darcy wasn't among them. Thinking she may be in the restroom, he anxiously paced back and forth in the hallway, awkwardly chewing at the nubs on his fingernails. After waiting 5 minutes, he was about ready to head back to the main school building, in case he'd missed her leave, when he heard something coming from the stairway leading to the basement. He cautiously walked to the end of the hallway and peered down into the darkness at the dusty wooden steps leading to the furnace room. The sound came again, clear as a church bell from the bottom of the stairs. It sounded like a rush of air, similar to the sound wind through a tunnel would make, except this was deeper and more restrained somehow. Justin felt a chill go down his spine. More than anything else, it sounded as though something very large was exhaling slowly. He was about to back away from the stairs when he spotted something moving down below. Through the murky shadows at the base of the stairs, he saw something very long and slender move along the basement floor, silently and fluidly like a liquid. It was a snake, and not the kind you'd find in your garden either. This appeared to be the type of snake they'd evacuate the zoo over if it escaped its habitat. Before Justin could process what exactly he should do regarding the unwelcome reptile, it was suddenly, violently pulled backwards from the way it had come by its tail, its head slamming against the bottom stair with a sick thump. The exhaling noise came again, louder this time, and if Justin didn't know better, he would have sworn the sound carried a hint of satisfaction with it. Justin took a nervous step backwards, not taking his eyes off of the stairs. Two more steps and he'd be out of sight to whatever was down there. He took another step back, and still no new sound came from below. One more step, and then he could turn and walk right out of there, back to the sunlight and a sense of normality. He took a third cautious step backwards, and the floorboard creaked beneath him with the intensity of a falling tree. From the base of the stairs came a short but loud snorting sound. And Jason turned on his heels and ran out of there as fast as he could move, tearing past the open door of the classroom where everyone turned to stare, and out the front doors into the chill of the autumn air. Once safely outside, he leaned against a tree and gasped for breath, trying to calm his nerves and slow his heart rate. Was he losing his mind? What was an animal like that doing in the frigid near-winter conditions of New England? And even more unnerving, what else had been down there that had so easily overpowered it? He bit furiously at his nails and winced as he drew blood with his teeth from under the nail of his index finger.
I'm all right. Calm down. I'm all right.
You're more than all right, Fonzie, especially from this angle.
Justin's heart leapt so far up his throat, his feet left the ground. He spun around to see Darcy walking up behind him, an innocent smirk on her face, but her appearance was far from ordinary. A fine layer of dust covered her clothes. Her normally immaculate hair was tangled, and she had a small grey stain on her chin, which, for the life of him, Justin couldn't identify. For a moment he just stood there stupidly, staring back at her in confusion, his mouth opening and closing like a fish as his voice failed to surface. Darcy's smirk faded and her eyes went serious.
Listen, Justin, you're a noble guy, and I appreciate your slightly creepy yet very sweet behavior of older brother protection towards me, but I'm telling you, I don't need it. David and I are just having fun. I'm not sure what you think you know about him, but I promise you, he's a gentleman. He has a bit of an ego, sure, but nothing I can't handle.
Darcy tapped her palm gently against Justin's cheek.
It's time to go chase some other lucky girl. Though, definitely change up your methods first.
You have a bug in your hair.
A writhing centipede at least 4 inches long was entangled in Darcy's hair just under her left ear. Darcy raised her hands calmly and carefully worked the little guy free before setting him down upon the ground. She giggled slyly.
I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
Darcy gave him a friendly wink and started back towards the music hall. When she reached the steps, she called back to him over her shoulder.
Don't worry about us, Justin. Everything is perfect.
The more perfect a thing is, the more susceptible to bad treatment it is.
Darcy turned around to face him, but continued to walk backwards into the building. She winked again playfully and pointed her index fingers at him.
Ah, Dante. Very good. You're learning.
Justin watched her disappear back into the music hall with the grace of a swan, but the aura of a serpent. He ran his fingers through his hair and slowly crouched down to squat beneath the tree, desperately trying to make sense of it all. If everything was truly all right, why did he feel like a rabbit that had just been spared by a fox? David and Darcy sat alone together in the bleachers on the football field under the starlight. David stroked Darcy's neck with two fingers as the two of them shared long, slow kisses. Darcy's hand pressed to David's chest, where she could feel his strong heartbeat. David looked into her eyes and gently brushed her hair away.
There's something I've been meaning to tell you.
You've changed your mind about asking me to homecoming?
David chuckled and kissed her forehead.
No, I'm definitely sticking with you.
Guess I'd better find a dress then.
I wanted to share something personal. I've done some rotten things before. I've never treated women right.
Darcy's face became serious and she stared deep into his eyes.
How so, babe?
David stared off into the distance for a moment. He bit his lip and exhaled deeply, as if trying to find the words to explain himself.
I've broken a few hearts, and haven't cared like I should about the feelings of these girls. I've been impatient, cold, and selfish. I don't want to be that person anymore. You changed me for the better. All I want now is to make you happy.
Darcy turned his head with her hand so he was looking her in the eye.
I'm glad to hear it. Is that all you'd like to tell me?
There's nothing more to tell.
Darcy smiled and kissed him again.
Thanks for your honesty, David. That means a lot to me.
Hey, do you want to get out of here? I know someplace private we can go.
Darcy kissed his neck tenderly and playfully bit his ear.
Absolutely.
Justin was exiting the library when he saw Darcy and David heading to David's Thunderbird across the parking lot. He tried to ignore them as he sullenly walked over towards his bike. Despite his best efforts, David had charmed another innocent young lady into his arms, and there was nothing more he could do short of kidnapping Darcy to protect her from getting hurt. As he climbed aboard his bike, he watched David open the passenger door for her, like any gentleman would. Maybe Justin had been overreacting. Maybe David had changed. Maybe Darcy was inspiring him to be a better person and helping him realize that women weren't objects for him to brutalize. As David walked around the back of the car, he unlocked his trunk and pulled something from inside. And Justin's blood ran cold. By the light of the full moon, he could make out the glint of metal in David's hand before he stuffed it into his waistband. Had that been a gun? Justin honestly couldn't tell. It had appeared to be a gun based on how David had handled it. Justin's mind raced as David slammed the trunk, climbing into the driver's seat and started the car. What else could the object have been? What kind of glinting metal object could David possibly need at his side while taking a drive with Darcy? Justin bit down on all four nails on his right hand as the car slowly began to roll out of the parking lot. Okay, maybe it wasn't a gun. Maybe it had been something completely innocent. But in his heart, Justin knew he couldn't afford to take that risk. He couldn't turn his back and go home and allow what had happened to Kelly happen to anyone else. With blood seeping from under his raw fingernails, he furiously pedaled his bike after the disappearing taillight. David parked his Thunderbird in the shadow of the empty barracks building and killed the engine, plunging them into nearly complete darkness, save the light of the moon. Darcy leaned in close to David and whispered in his ear.
I like your secret spot, David. What is this place?
It's an abandoned military base. They used it as a radar site at the beginning of the war.
Groovy.
David wrapped his arms around Darcy and gave her a long kiss on the mouth. Darcy raised her hands and rested them on either side of his face.
You bring the ladies up here often?
Only the precious few special ones.
As David began unbuttoning Darcy's blouse while he kissed her on the neck, Darcy raised his head to make him look her in the eye.
As great as that feels, I'm going to stop you there.
David blinked stupidly at her, like a dog whose food bowl was taken away from him when he was only half finished.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry, babe.
I'm not ready to go that far.
David stared disbelievingly at the smug expression on her face as she leaned back contentedly against the passenger door.
Are you kidding me? Back at the field, you were all over me. I brought us here because you said you were okay with us finding a private spot.
I did say that, yes. But I never said I was ready to let you grope me with those clammy hands like a blind porpoise.
David punched the steering wheel and hissed in frustration.
I led you on, I admit it, and you have a right to be disappointed. But let me ask you something, David. Exactly how special am I to you?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Back at the field, you said I had changed you for the better. That all you wanted to do was make me happy. Was that true? Or is that just something guys say to get their girlfriends naked?
David clenched his fists hard and stared at her with rage in his eyes.
You lying, manipulative bitch. You think you have the fucking right to test me?
I think I have the right to say no. Let me ask you, David. When a girl says no, what exactly does that mean to you?
David's fist connected with Darcy's face so hard, the back of her head cracked the passenger side window.
That's what I think it means.
David pulled a Ruger handgun from his belt and pointed it directly at her stomach.
You think you can play games with me? Do you have any idea who I am? You're going to cooperate, or I'm going to blow a hole in your gut and leave you here to bleed out.
Darcy lowered her hand from her face and looked at her palm as if to check for blood. But aside from looking slightly dazed, she appeared completely unharmed by his blow. She closed her eyes, flexed her jaw muscles, she rolled her head and cracked her neck. She went very still for perhaps 3 seconds, and when her eyes shot open again, they were full of amusement and malice. And David felt as if her gaze was burning through him into the upholstery behind him.
You know what? I almost felt that.
Darcy's hand flew forward at a speed David's eyes couldn't follow, and her hand closed around the gun. Reflexively, he pulled the trigger. And Darcy's head snapped sideways, dodging the shot as it blew out the passenger side window. With one hand on the gun and the other clamped down like a vice on his wrist, Darcy leaned forward and hissed maliciously into his face, her voice suddenly more animal than human.
Hope not ever to see heaven. I have come to lead you to the other shore, into eternal darkness, into fire and into ice. Dante.
In one fluid motion, Darcy snapped his wrist and hurled the gun backwards out the broken window. Before David could even begin to process the pain of his shattered hand, he felt the cold bite of 4 sharp blades stabbing deep into his groin between his legs. The very first thing he thought in that first second of shock was where did she get the knives? But in the next moment, all he could think about was the pain. He screamed in uncontrollable agony as he stared down at his mutilated lap and discovered the 4 black talons that had stabbed him had appeared to have sprouted from the ends of Darcy's fingers. He frantically tried to pull the claws out of him with his useless hand as blood ran everywhere across the seat and began to pool in the driver's side footwell. Tears blurred his vision as he looked back into the merciless red eyes Darcy now stared him down with. Her jaw had detached itself and was hanging open by the skin of her cheeks, and David could now make out a savage row of fangs concealed at the back of her throat. She shook her head like a lion would shake its mane, and as her jaw rattled and swung limply like wet laundry on a line, several insects fell from her hair and became caught in his sticky, fresh blood.
You think you can hurt women and answer to nobody? You think you can take an innocent life and there won't be consequences?
Darcy wrenched her hand back out of his lap in a scooping motion, ripping his pieces off and tearing a great chunk out of his lower abdomen. David vomited blood and bile all over the steering wheel and frantically clawed at the door handle with his good hand. the thing that used to be Darcy, grabbed the back of his head and put his face through the driver's side window, shattering the glass with the force of a cannonball. Blindly, David groped for the outside handle and forced the door open, blood running from several open gashes on his face. He collapsed onto the forest floor and crawled screaming and gasping towards the empty barracks building. A long, snake-like tentacle shot out from the car and encircled his foot, dragging him back. The creature stepped out from the car and stood over David like a jackal over a fresh carcass. Using the tentacle, it flipped him over on his back, and then gracefully, almost seductively, it placed a hand on his face.
Where are you going, babe? We barely started fooling around.
The creature used her talons to coax David's mouth open, and then slowly fed her hand down his throat.
This is for Kelly.
The creature wrenched the balled fist back out of David's mouth, shattering his jaw and sending several teeth exploding into the air.
Oh, don't lose consciousness, babe. We still have more names.
The creature dug her talons deep into David's left shoulder.
This is for Bethany and Ashley.
With a swift peeling motion, she tore the flesh off of David's arm clean down past his elbow.
And Caroline and Connie.
She tore his right kneecap away, the flesh of his thigh coming off with it. Suddenly the creature paused as she heard the cocking of a gun hammer behind her. She smoothly, almost mechanically, turned around, torn ribbons of bloody flesh hanging from her claws. Justin stood about a dozen feet away, awkwardly clutching the Ruger and pointing it directly at her. The creature noticed that, despite the distance, Justin had faint traces of David's blood splatter on his face and clothes. Justin stammered at her as if he was standing in knee-deep snow.
Stop! Stop it! He's had enough!
The creature tilted its head sideways and let out a deep chuckle.
Do you really want it to stop?
Justin could barely keep the heavy gun steady in his hands. Half shrouded in the shadows of the trees, he could barely make out what the creature was. He could only make out an outline of a tall, spidery figure with far too many elongated appendages, a portion of rough, grey reptilian skin and huge red eyes glowing like coals against the ashes. Like it had always been when talking with Darcy, he found himself stuttering, barely able to string a sentence together.
What are you?
The creature let out a long, deep, satisfied hiss.
I'm the consequences.
The creature stepped forward into the moonlight and bent forward towards Justin, its two sickly wet tongues recoiling back into its gaping mouth as it slowly raised a single finger to his lips. Justin dropped the gun and sprinted backwards towards his hidden bite. When he reached it, he glanced backwards, see David's body being dragged into the empty barracks building. As he climbed onto the seat and took off down the dirt road into the night, he heard a muffled cry of pain and terror echoing out of the building. David wasn't dead yet, and he had a feeling for him the worst was yet to come. At the back of the classroom, Justin finished his final exam of the school year and set his pencil down. He leaned back and stretched for a moment before putting his legs out in front of him to rest on David's empty chair. He hadn't seen Darcy again after that night. The consensus around the school was that the two lovebirds had run away together, and Justin didn't say a word to otherwise dispute it. He'd been back up to the abandoned base since about a week afterwards in the middle of the day, but had failed to find any trace of David, his car or the gun. There were some traces of dry blood on the ground, but nothing to suggest it had belonged to anything other than a wounded animal. When examining the inside of the barracks building, he discovered a mound of dirt in a corner, not so subtly hidden by some scavenged pieces of plywood. He hadn't needed to dig for very long before he discovered what it was. He had called the police, and they had shortly uncovered Kelly's body. Her parents had been devastated, of course, but also relieved to finally have some closure on the whereabouts of their missing child. The school held her a proper memorial service, and instead of a picture outside by the fountain, she was given a commemoration plaque in the school lobby. She was even getting a college scholarship named after her. Justin made eye contact with a girl one row over who was just finishing up her final exam as well. She smiled sweetly at him and waved. He gave a small smile and waved back, showcasing his perfect fingernails. Her name was Megan, and he was pretty sure she liked Elvis and pizza. He thought about ending the shy flirting from across the room and just asking her out. He'd just finished high school after all, and was eager to try his luck at a new type of challenge, being the most perfect type of boyfriend he could be. As the bell rang and the students began to exit, he stood up and walked over towards Megan to meet her at the door. She would eventually ask him about how he'd found Kelly's body, and he would tell her the truth, save one detail. One detail he hadn't told anyone, not even Kelly's parents. What had caught his attention sitting on the mound of dirt in the corner of the building where several scraps of wood had been carelessly stacked was a single potted daisy, blood red in color, and recently watered. It was September of 2016, and all of the returning students shuffled reluctantly towards the school's main entryway, their earbuds in and their eyes on their phones, oblivious to the wide world around them. Ryan pulled into the parking lot late, with the echo of the second bell already fading away. He kicked open the door of the Nissan GTR his parents had recently bought him and angrily yelled into his cell phone.
Ugh, I'm late for class, you idiot. I can't talk right now. I gotta go.
He slammed the door shut and marched angrily towards the school, his phone pressed to his ear with his shoulder while he carried an iPad in one hand and a Monster energy drink in the other.
Well then, I won't come visit you tonight. That's all. Christ, you're such a bitch.
He hung up the phone and shoved it into his pocket. When he reached the front steps, he sat down and lit up a cigarette. Fuck it. He was already late. He exhaled some smoke into the cold morning air and ran his fingers through his hair in frustration.
Having a rough morning?
Ryan looked up to see a very attractive young girl wearing a leather jacket, skinny jeans and a low-cut top walking towards him across the parking lot. She had a purple streak dyed into her long, dark, flowing hair. Ryan smirked at her.
My girlfriend is guilt-tripping me into visiting her in the hospital after school. I told her I have practice, but she claims I owe her.
Miguel sat down next to him and took his cigarette from his fingertips and took a short, classy puff.
Why? Did you push her down some stairs?
Ryan gave her an annoyed look.
She grabbed my phone in front of me and started going through it. She has no right to do that. I went to grab it back and she fell onto the porch steps and broke her arm.
She took another contemplated puff on the cigarette before handing it back to him.
She fell? Or you shoved her?
Ryan took the cigarette back and took a drag, but his cold eyes never left her.
She fucking fell.
The girl smirked and slapped his back.
Meh, she probably deserved it anyway, right?
Ryan shrugged.
Maybe. I'm Ryan, by the way.
He held out his hand for her to shake.
My name's Darcy. Pride and avarice and envy are the three fierce sparks that set all hearts ablaze.
Ryan gave her a confused look.
What does that mean?
She took his hand and shook it warmly.
It's Dante, and it means... but I can't wait to get to know you.
Thank you.
Okay, y'all, that is my time. I hope y'all enjoyed the show. To those of you who tuned in or will be tuning in the playback, I want to say thank you for the love and support that you have been providing to me during this time that I've been doing the 31 Days of Horror. But before I get out of here, I just want to say meet me here the same time, same place tomorrow. Y'all know the vibe. And I'm going to leave y'all with the thought of the night. And my thought of the night is this. Never let someone be a branch on your tree, because the only thing that falls off quicker than a branch is the leaves. And y'all already know most people are quick to leave. So make sure that the people in your life are the roots that you need to sustain the test of time. With that being said, peace, love, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.